Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 192. In the news this week, I just wanted to once more remind you that the Valley of Chicago Dyslexia Center walk is almost upon us. So if you are a member of the Valley of Chicago, remember this is your personal charity. And it's only $20 to walk in the event. There will be the shrine cars, clowns, food, fun for the whole family, and just a bunch of brothers there and friends. It'll be a lot of fun. So it's going to be a great time, and we need your help. So if you live in the area, sign up to walk, $20. If you don't or can't, then please consider just donating a few dollars to the walk. You can visit www.walkfordyslexiachicago.org for more information. And in addition to this, Brother Juan Sepulveda has graciously given us a coupon code to use there. If you want to check it out, please visit freemasonryart.com and go ahead and buy whatever you want and use the promo code CCDC at the checkout, and you'll get 10% off, as well as Brother Juan will send 10% back to the center. So it's a nice win-win situation. Many thanks to everybody who is pre-ordering the WCY lapel pin. Those will be coming out very soon. We're looking at May 7th as a delivery date to me, and then I will package them up and send them all out. I have all of the envelopes ready to go. So as you guys order them, I fill out an envelope, so all I have to do is drop them in and ship them out. It'll be pretty quick once we get them in. If you can't wait, well, then there are the button pins, and those are only $5. I send out orders every single Monday. I also want to mention that I do have Tales from the Craft by Brother Stephen L. Harrison in print in the WCY store, so they are $18, and it's a match of Amazon.com's price, and we ship anywhere in the continental United States, and for $25, international shipping anywhere in the world, so please check those out. This week, we have an esoteric Freemason segment after the paper as well, but let's get into this week's paper. And when I chose this piece, it was after reading a bit of one of the lectures in the third degree when we explain the symbology of the beehive. I obviously can't read it here on the show, but basically, it kind of reads like if people who are either not Masons or not industrious or productive members of society, then they don't deserve our help. It's kind of an interesting line, and I'll throw that one out there. Let me know what you think on the Facebook page or by retweeting it at Whence Came You and use the hashtag beehive. So, on to the paper, which is called The Beehive, and it was posted on November 1st, 2010 by the leader of the forum, and I will have a link to that website in the show notes. The Beehive. The Beehive is a rather curious symbol, and it has always posed a problem for the craft. The problem doesn't lie in what the Beehive symbolizes, industry and cooperation, two perfectly good Masonic virtues. The thing that sets it apart is actually its variance with the main categories of craft symbology. The first of these categories is a group of architectural objects, the square, compasses, level, etc. They come from an age of Gothic cathedrals and illustrate man's place in the universe by the tools of operative masons. The other is a group of biblical symbols, Jacob's ladder, King Solomon's temple, etc. They tap more directly into the world of spiritual heritage and bring the fruits of ancient wisdom to the craft. Curiously, the beehive does not fit either category. Although it promotes cooperative labor, it is not really an architectural symbol, and while the Bible occasionally mentions milk and honey, that scarcely qualifies the beehive as a biblical symbol. This places it among a small group of Masonic icons that lie outside the mainstream. So where did this peculiar item originate, and what does it have to do with Freemasonry? An obscure origin. The answer may lie in an obscure piece of church symbology. The beehive has long been associated with Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, shortly after the start of the 12th century. A French knight named Hugh de Payon approached Bernard, then serving as abbot of Clairvaux, for help in promoting an order of knights he'd just organized. The project grew from de Payon's grand vision of leading an armed force to patrol the road from Joppa to Jerusalem. In those days, many pilgrims made a heroic effort traveling to the Holy Land, only to die of thirst or fall prey to bandits on the last 50 kilometers of their journey. De Payon saw the need for protection on that final short leg of the pilgrimage, but he had only a handful of followers and no financial resources. To make his plan work, he needed official recognition from the church, money for munitions and supplies, and new recruits. To secure all these, he needed help from high places. That's where Abbot Bernard came in. He gave de Payon his complete support, using his eloquence to its fullest in arguing the knight's case to the church hierarchy. Within 2 years, de Payon had a monastic rule over his knightly order, and that made it official. Bernard's support also gave him a leg up in the efforts to raise funds and attract recruits. The new order, now universally known as the Knights Templar, became one of the most famous organizations in the world. It held sway in both church and military circles for nearly 200 years. Even now, centuries after its demise, it remains a centerpiece in the romance of the Crusades, a lasting legacy. The details of the Templar story, their heroism and piety, depicts virtues to which everyone can aspire and lessons everyone should heed. Surely it is no coincidence that the beehive, the emblem of Bernard's eloquence, the very key to the Templar's initial success, entered the symbology of a fraternity that, centuries later, would claim descent from the order. Not exactly proof. Of course, this is far from the proof that Freemasonry descended from the Templars. At most, it shows that some long-forgotten Mason introduced the symbol to commemorate a legendary connection, which he himself might not have thought historically sound. But as the beehive is neither architectural nor biblical, we must look elsewhere for the basis of its association with the craft. In that regard, its subtle connection with Saint Bernard provides a satisfying answer. It explains why the beehive belongs among the fraternity symbols, and his connection with the Templars shows what this curious symbol has to do with virtues that Masons have always held dear. And now comes the time on the show when I ask you to support it. Of course, our apps are now free on the podcast Sourced. Thanks to all of your donations and purchases over the last few years, now we can offer the app absolutely for free. So please go check that out. Go to the podcast Source in your app store, download it, search for Whence Came You, and there you'll have it. Streaming episodes, you can download your favorites, you can download the app extras like the bonus features and all the papers that we read on this show. Check it out. Another way you can actually support the show is through some shopping. So whether you're on onnit.com, freemasonryart.com, or freemasontees.com, if you use the coupon code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off, and 10% comes back to this show to help keep the lights on. If you'd like to purchase a button pin for $5, you may do that. I send out, as I said earlier, every order on the following Monday. We have the lapel pin pre-sale. These are solid brass pins with 24-karat plated gold. Very little gold on these, actually. But what is very nice is the solid brass pin, the nice enamel pour that we got. In addition to this, what's really nice is we upgraded the clasp on the back of the pin to a E-clasp. So it's not the typical butterfly one that'll just pop off when your seatbelt grabs it, or maybe you're wrestling outside a lodge for whatever reason. They're really nice lapel pins. Check them out. They are $10 and $2 to ship, so $12 total donation, and you can check those out on wcypodcast.com. Just click on the limited edition store. And of course, last but not least, is our direct PayPal donation. So you pick the amount, whether it's $1 or $2, whatever you feel comfortable with, you can send the show directly, and that goes right into our operating funds. So thank you very much in advance. I do appreciate everything, and I know everybody else does as well, because now those supporters who have helped us, you are a producer of the show. So this week for the esoteric segment, I wanted to go a little bit outside the norm here and talk about the pillars. So here's an article from a website called Before It's News. Usually this site is entertaining at best, but I found some things mentioned in this article a little interesting, to say the least. So here we go. Since the dawn of civilization, the entrance of sacred and mysterious places have been guarded by two pillars. Whether in art or in architecture, twin pillars are archetypal symbols representing an important gateway or passage toward the unknown. In Freemasonry, the pillars are named and represent one of the Brotherhood's most recognizable symbols, prominently featured in Masonic art, documents, and buildings. This article will look at the origins of these timeless symbols and their esoteric meanings. The concept of twin pillars standing at the gates of sacred places can be traced back to ancient civilizations of antiquity. Some claim from Atlantis, the lost source of Hermetic knowledge, a gateway. The symbol of the twin pillars have, since time immemorial, guarded the gateways to holy places and mysterious realms. They mark the passage toward the unknown and the otherworldly. In ancient Greece, the Pillars of Hercules was the phase that was applied to the promontories that flank the entrance to the Strait of Gibraltar. The northern pillar is the Rock of Gibraltar in the British territory of Gibraltar. The Pillars of Hercules, or Heracles, guarding the passage toward the unknown. According to Plato's account, the lost realm of Atlantis was situated beyond the Pillars of Hercules, in effect placing it in the realm of the unknown. Renaissance tradition says that the pillars bore the warning, nec plus ultra, also non plus ultra, nothing further beyond, serving as a warning to sailors and navigators to go no further. Symbolically, going beyond the pillars of Hercules can mean leaving the foulness of the material world to reach a higher realm of enlightenment. The two columns, called the Pillars of Hercules in ancient Greece, stood at a gateway to the Sphere of the Enlightened. The frontispiece of Francis Bacon's New Atlantis features the Pillars of Hercules as a gateway to a new world. According to occult lore, Atlantis is the civilization from which all Hermetic knowledge emerged. The rebirth of this lost kingdom has been the dream of mystery schools for centuries. The city of the philosophic elect rises from the highest mountain peak on Earth, and here, the gods of the wise dwell together in everlasting felicity. In the foreground are the symbolic pillars of Hercules, which appear on the title page of Bacon's Novum Organum, and between them runs the path which leads upward from the uncertainties of earth to that perfect order which is established in the sphere of the enlightened. In Freemasonry, the Masonic usage of the names of the pillars actually originate from the biblical account of King Solomon's temple. The master builder of the Temple of Solomon was a prominent figure in Masonic ritual. The verses 1 Kings 6:1 through 38, 1 Kings chapter 7 and chapter 8 describe the dimensions, the construction, and the dedication of the temple under Solomon. One passage describes more specifically the twin pillars standing in front of King Solomon's temple, and they are 15. For he cast two pillars of brass, of 18 cubits high apiece, and a line of 12 cubits did compass either of them about. 16. And he made two chapiters of molten brass to set upon the tops of the two pillars. The height of the one chapiter was 5 cubits, the height of the other chapiter was 5 cubits. 17. And nets of checkerwork and wreaths of chainwork for the chapiters, which were upon the top of the pillars, 7 for one chapiter and 7 for the other chapiter. 18. And he made the pillars and two rows round upon the one network to cover the chapiters that were upon the top with pomegranates, and so did he for the other chapiter. 19. And the chapiters that were upon the top of the pillars were of lily work in the porch, 4 cubits. 20. And the chapiters upon the two pillars had pomegranates also above, over against the belly which was by the network. And the pomegranates were 200 in rows round upon the other chapiter. 21. And he set up the pillars in the porch of the temple, and he set up the right pillar and called them in name, and he set up the left pillar and called it by name. 22. And upon the top of the pillars was lily work. So was the work of the pillars finished. 1 Kings chapter 7. So there you have some interesting facts regarding the two pillars, and there is so much more that we can go into. And I think we will continue the discussion about the two pillars and just the mythical and the Gnostic lore, and going back to ancient Egypt and possibly looking at the pillars there and looking at the ancient pillars that are said to be under the earth, that you have to cross the river Styx to find the true meanings of life and all kinds of interesting things that are associated with these pillars. Of course, I'm paraphrasing tons of things that I've heard over the years, and I think we'll dive a little bit deeper into this, not next week, but the week after, so look for that in episode 194. This week's famous Freemason is James Roosevelt, politician and congressman, son of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was initiated November 7, 1935, in Architect's Lodge No. 519 in New York. James Roosevelt II, born December 23, 1907, passed away August 13, 1991, was the oldest son of U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt. He was a United States congressman, an officer in the United States Marine Corps, an aide to his father, the official secretary to the president, a Democratic Party activist, and a businessman with varied interests. After leaving the White House, Roosevelt moved to Hollywood, California, where he first accepted a job as a $750 a week administrative assistant for motion picture producer Samuel Goldwyn. He was on Goldwyn's payroll until November of 1940. In 1939, he set up Globe Productions, a company to produce short films for Penny Arcades, but the company was liquidated in 1944 while James was on active duty with the Marine Corps. Roosevelt also produced the film Pot of Gold and distributed the British film Pastor Hall. During his Hollywood period, Roosevelt became closely involved with Joseph Schenck, the movie mogul who funneled mob money into the Democratic Party. Schenck also lent James money for his movie. When Schenck went to jail, James interceded with his father to pardon him, But again, Henry Morgenthau Jr. vetoed the plan. James later wrote that stories appeared that I was mixed up with the mafia mobsters. After Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt requested assignments to combat duty. He transferred to the Marine Raiders, the Marines Commando Force, and became second in command of the 2nd Raider Battalion under Evans Carlson, whom Roosevelt knew when Carlson commanded the Marine Detachment at the Warm Springs, Georgia residence of Franklin Roosevelt. His influence helped win presidential backing for the Raiders, who were opposed by Marine Corps traditionalists. Despite occasionally debilitating health problems, Roosevelt served with the 2nd Raiders at Midway and in the Mackinac Island Raid, where he was awarded the Navy Cross. He was given command of the new 4th Raiders, but was invalidated in February of 1943, retired on October 1, 1959 as a Brigadier General. Roosevelt suffered from flat feet, and while other Marines were required to wear boots, he was always allowed to wear sneakers. Despite having been a liberal Democrat all of his life, James Roosevelt joined Democrats for Nixon and publicly supported President Nixon's re-election in 1972, and also supported Ronald Reagan in 1980 and in 1984. Roosevelt had 6 children, and he died in Newport Beach in California in 1991 of complications arising from a stroke and Parkinson's disease. He was 83 and was the last surviving child of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. So he was the firstborn and the last to pass away. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You. You can check us out on Google Plus as well at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can also email me with any questions you have to that address. And please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing articles every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. In addition, the Masonic Roundtable goes live every Tuesday night at 10, 9 Central. This week, we're going to be talking a little bit about education, what it's worth. And I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but where we're going is it okay to accept money from lodges to go speak if you're a brother? A very interesting and sensitive topic, but we're going to try to tackle it. So you're not going to want to miss it. Tuesday, 10, 9 Central. Please remember, I do have those copies of Tales from the Craft in print by Brother Stephen L. Harrison. It's a great book, and I know you're going to love it. So check that out on wcypodcast.com in the limited edition store. And that's it, guys. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.